Hello and welcome to the Wednesday Roundtable edition of the Vandy Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lee, joined by Billy Derrick and Luke Wyatt. Our podcast, part of the 440 Sports Network. It is presented by Anchor Impact, which you might say is having an impact right now, Billy Derrick. Tell us a little bit more about Anchor Impact.
I think you're right, Chris. Commodore Nation can get closer to Vanderbilt Athletics than ever before now with Anchor Impact. They are the official NIL collective for Vanderbilt University. As an Anchor Impact member, you gain exclusive privileges and benefits, offering deeper engagement with student athletes, coaches, staff, and the entire Vanderbilt community. You can access behind-the-scenes content, exclusive events, unique merchandise, and personalized experiences that creates an unparalleled connection with the student athlete's journey. You also become a catalyst for change. Join the mission of Anchor Impact to support student athletes and elevate Vanderbilt athletics to new heights. Become a member today and be part of this impactful journey. Help the Commodores thrive and contribute now by logging on to anchorimpact.com/register.
All right, basketball season, which it wasn't much of a past basketball season, but this next one coming could be interesting, and it's going to be presented by the Wash House. If you're dreading laundry day, if it's stealing time from the things you truly enjoy, let the laundry professionals at the Wash House take care of that for you. With two convenient locations in the Nashville area, drop off your dirty laundry, and the Wash House's professional attendants can give you back the one thing you can never have enough of. That's your time. Within 24 hours, you can pick up your nicely folded, fresh, clean laundry, ready to be put away. Check out washhouseclean.com. Stop in today. Get your time back. All right. Guest today is presented by the Murfreesboro Pure Milk Company, a family-owned third-generation milk and ice cream distribution company located in Murfreesboro. The partnership began 50 years ago with Purity Dairy in Nashville to provide Purity milk and ice cream to consumers in Middle Tennessee. Now they serve Southern Kentucky, Northern Alabama, Chattanooga, and North Georgia. Today they supply grocery stores, convenience stores, and others with Purity products, as well as Mayfield, Nestle, and Häagen-Dazs ice cream. More information, visit their website at mpmci.com. We can enjoy our ice cream. Might even be able to enjoy basketball season, too. Been a while. Gentlemen, let's just start here. I feel like this is the best basketball roster, and we're doing this as Vanderbilt's added 7 transfers, which is unbelievable. There's been talk about the quality of the transfers, and I'll get into that. I think that this is pretty much exactly what they needed, and I never dreamed that Mark Byington would be able to pull this off in a month, but that's where we are. I feel as optimistic about Vanderbilt basketball as I have in probably since the day Darius Garland signed. Thoughts? Yeah. I'll start with you, Billy.
Yeah, Chris, I'm surprised. I'll be honest. I think slowly but surely these last 2 or 3 weeks after each commitment, we'd react one way or the other. And I forget who the first guy was. I guess it was Jalen Carey from JMU, and then Tyler Nickel. And it was just a little bit slower developing than a lot of the other schools, and especially timing wise. But this last week and a half or so, it's been a guy every other day, it feels like. And so I just think, Chris, it's a sign that they know what they're doing and that they have something to sell right away. And Byington said that in his introductory press conference. He said, "Hey, I can't wait to sell what I think we'll be able to get kids here." And you can also see the relationships that this staff has built with players, because I guarantee you, a lot of these aren't just cold calls. They're not just looking up rankings saying, "Where's this kid?" I guarantee you there's some, obviously Tyler Nickel, there was a relationship there, Jalen Carey from JMU. I would assume MJ Collins as well in the Virginia area. But we talked initially about Byington having roots in the DMV, Virginia, DC, the Carolinas, and even in Georgia. We look at it where a lot of these kids are from. It's either Georgia or up there in that East Coast. That's kind of where it's been. So I think that has been interesting too. A lot of the things we said early on that we think would help this program early, it has. And so, yeah, Chris, I've been impressed, and I think they still need, even though they've gotten 7 guys, I think they still need a 5-man, and I think they need another shooter. I think they've made some good pickups, but it's really just Edwards and Nickel who are the, you know, the really efficient shooters. Huffman can shoot, but he's not a great shooter. And Jay Collins does, you know, at times, but again, not a great knockdown shooter. And they've got a couple of freshmen. I think they still need another shooter. But yeah, Luke, from this point, I mean, I can't really, it's hard to nitpick what they've done so far.
No, I'm surprised a little bit, to be honest with you. I thought there would be even more roster retention and that he would work his way through it in year one. I thought we may get five transfers total. I'm over the moon about a couple of them. I mean, Tyler Nickel, I think, is going to be great for us. I think he's a starter. I think, obviously, Edwards is a starter. You know, you've got a team now that I think will double the win total of last year's team. I think this is an 18-13 type team. And, you know, last year we won 9. I just, unless we have a bunch of injuries, you've got a staff that works. Mm-hmm. They work. They're college basketball coaches. And keep an eye on having to hang on to Rick Ray, because I think Rick is a very good recruiter. And that's somebody that they hang on to for dear life moving into the future, because his staff is pretty impressive as well.
I have dealt with Rick Ray before Vanderbilt. When I was doing some work at Blue Ribbon, I used to write the OVC, and I covered Rick for 3 or 4 years when he's at Southeastern Missouri, where he just didn't have much for prayer because nobody there really cares. But Rick was a very personable, easygoing, easy to get to know guy, and I think that that's going to come across and help them recruiting. You saw, I think Edwards shouted him out on Twitter this weekend. So that's a good catch by you. But look, this roster, and I think people early on were focused, well, we needed this and we got that. You can't look at it that way. You got to look at it like a baseball pitching rotation. Like, you need five starters or maybe six, right? And if you get a guy who's a three starter, you know, you need a number three starter, a quality number three somewhere, right? He may not be your one, he may not be your two, but you need a three. And, you know, if you're having to pitch your five as a three, you're in trouble. They just needed to fill out spots. You need 9 or 10 guys who can play. And I feel like they've got that. Now, all of them aren't stars. Maybe none of them are stars. I don't know. But I'll see if you guys agree with me. The last three freshman classes, and I know it's different now with the portal. When is the last time Vanderbilt brought in three worst freshman classes in a row than what Jerry Stackhouse just brought in? I mean, they're awful, awful. That left you with almost no foundation to build on. You had to go that way. You're not going to get 8 McDonald's All-Americans in the portal. What you need are guys who can play. Maybe some of those guys give you 8 minutes a night, but that's 8 minutes that somebody's got to cover somewhere. And I just feel like in the way of filling out the roster, would you still like to get some other things? Yes. Do they have a roster? They've got the guys on this team, and they'll get more. But by the time they're done, I think the guys on this year's team or this next year's team played 7,300 minutes last year at the Division I level. I think South Carolina had guys that played about 8,500 minutes last year that led the league, and you saw how that went. They are going to be one of the more experienced teams if they just get a couple of guys that played some to fill out their roster. And that is a huge, huge starting point. That is just having guys coming into next season.
Yeah, and they just haven't had that under Stackhouse. I mean, they haven't gotten old, you know, but and already in one off season, you've got more experience than they had last year and the year before. I mean, so I just think you look at it, Chris and Luke, and he also knows who fits his style. That's important too. This is his own style, and maybe he doesn't get, or maybe he doesn't want or need a traditional five. You know, maybe they don't go out and get another one. I still think they do need to, but maybe Byington realizes, hey, I've got what I need right now down low. I still think they would struggle, but again, we don't know how his style will translate. It could translate really well. Maybe, you know, it takes a year or two to get this thing really rolling in the SEC. But Luke, it's crazy the way we're talking about it now in a month or two, as opposed to 4 or 5 years of the Stackhouse era where it had just stagnated other than year four, you know, a 2 month period in year four. That was it. All of a sudden, and Chris, your message on the board was hilarious about that. We're basically free from, you know, covering something that definitely wasn't a college basketball program. But Luke, it's just like you said, they work. And this is a college basketball staff, and you have to do that in today's day and age.
Well, sometimes, guys, we get too complicated and figure, you know, it's hard work. It's nothing's changed. If you work hard and you make the kids work hard in a system that's free and flowing like his is, then you're going to have good results. I think that's worked at Georgia Southern for him, worked at James Madison for him. And you look at what Stackhouse tried to do, and you know, we always – kind of joked about he always used the non-conference as a exhibition games. Well, the reason why he had to do that was because he had a very complicated offensive system. And so you had guys that weren't free and easy playing. I think Ezra got it and Tyron got it at times. But most of those guys, they played tight. They didn't shoot the ball well because they're not comfortable in what they were doing. They had to think about what they're doing. If you're just up there running and playing positionless basketball like this will be, and you're running and playing hard and having a good time, some of those kids that don't have great shooting statistics, you watch them go up.
That's what I told Joey the other day. I said, you know, because he had kind of brought up the fact that they need another shooter, and I agree. I think they do. But don't forget about the fact that maybe MJ Collins or any, you know, any of the other guys improve, you know, in the next 4 or 5 months. That's a good point, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've got a couple of shooters. This was not a great shooting league last year. I think the SEC was bottom three in the country in three-point percentage. So, I don't know if you can land another couple. I mean, I think Nickel was a good shooter. The thing is, a lot of their guys are efficient shooters, and some of them are efficient two-point shooters, getting good looks. I guess that's dunks or whatever. But as a team, adding up what these guys did last year, it's a reasonably efficient team. I think they shot 53% effective field goal percentage, 74% from the line. That's right up there with the best in the league, I think, last year. Now, again, some of it's how it is, how you get there, right? And that's different when you got guys that hit dunks as efficient shots and guys that hit threes. But I don't think they're awful. I mean, Nickel can shoot. A couple of those guys could shoot threes.
Edwards.
Edwards was not a super efficient scorer, but he's more of a volume scorer. But sometimes you just need a guy who can get baskets when the shot clock's running down, and you'll take a trade-off there. I feel like they hit a lot of the areas of what they needed, guys, and they're not done yet.
Yeah, and when's the last time they had a volume scorer like that at the guard position? You know, Mannion could get into Pippen. You're right, but Mannion could get into the lane, but wasn't really a shooter. You know, he improved his mid range, but Scottie Pippen was the last guy to really be that. And Chris, there were times where he carried that team. They had a decent team that year. Now it was really just Scottie Pippen and Chapman and, you know, a couple other pieces there. I didn't think that team was awful, but I think that we might get a little bit of a taste of that, but just better defense, better coaching, of course. You know, Stackhouse won't be the coach, but, you know, getting Edwards in, and he kind of flew under the radar a little bit, at least for Joey and I, people who were looking at it. And I finally looked at, you know, the rankings one day, the point guard or the guard rankings, and he was one of the best available guards out there. And Vanderbilt snatched him up a couple of days later. So, and it, coming out of the AAC, you know, this isn't a guy that's coming from a group of five, you know, school. That this is something that I don't think the previous staff could have ever done. And you know, they've proven that this thing is I think headed in the right direction, no doubt.
I guess my question, guys, what would you guys think these last two pieces to add to the roster? Are they just going to be glue guys? What type of guy? I know we need a big, like you mentioned, Billy. These last two, would they be guys that could come back like a JRT, or are we talking about two more portal guys?
Yeah.
I think JRT, you nailed it with what they need. I don't know if it's going to be Rivera Torres, it'll be one of them, or it'll be somebody else. But I think maybe – although they've looked, shot blocking is perceived as a need. They got three guys. It blocked at least a shot per 70 possessions last year. That's not great, better, but you, yeah.
I mean, it does you no good to have a guy like that's 7 foot if he can't run the floor. If he's just a post up big guy, it's not going to fit in what we're doing. So, yeah. You know, you're 6'9 and long, like Van Allen Lubin, and I think Carey will be a good defender, and I think McLaughlin's a good defender. So you got three guys there that, you know, you a lot of your blocks are what? When a guy goes to the rim, you trail it and slap it from behind. That's where a lot of blocks come from now.
Well, so, and guys, yeah.
Unless you have to go against like a Zach Edey, then we shouldn't be in too much trouble on many nights.
Yeah, and he's gone. But guys, look at Alabama. Yeah, look at Alabama last year. Right. And they made it to the Final Four with a guy like Nick Pringle at the five, who's what, Chris, 6'9"? I mean, think 6'10". He's a long guy, but he's really athletic, can run the floor. And I mean, we've compared Byington to Nate Oates before, and I think that can work. I mean, you know, you don't have to have a 7 foot Zach Edey in today's day and age. Now, you can't be 6'6", 6'7" down there in the SEC, but you know, as long as you got 6'9", maybe 6'10", I think they'll be fine in this system. Now, if they were running something totally different where they were slowing things down and needed a big 6'11", 7-footer to really bang down low, maybe. But, you know, I think within this system, I still think they need to get a 5 just for depth reasons, and maybe he's not a starter. Maybe they've already got their two starters at the 4 and the 5 right now. I still think they need a 5. And then, Luke, I think they need another shooter just because, you know, say Nickel goes down, Edwards is really your only knockdown guy. I think having three guys where you can look at and go, okay, we've got three guys that we can rely on to shoot. Maybe Collins improves. You know, maybe McLaughlin is a guy that ends up, you know, stepping out. And then there was another guy, Huffman. I think Huffman's an X factor. You know, do they stick with him at point guard? He was a 4-year player at Davidson, and I've started to like him a little bit more. Now, you know, he was at Davidson in the SoCon. So does that, well, not SoCon. What conference is they in, Chris?
Dayton, A-10.
Davidson,
who A-10. Who did you say? Davidson is A-10 also. Davidson. Yeah,
A-10. Yeah. So, yeah, A-10. So, you know, decent league. But I think with Huffman, he's a kid that if he plays up to where they need him to play, Luke, like you said, this team can get to 18, you know, wins, I think. So he'll be a key. And does he shoot? Does he shoot the ball? I think you need a point guard that can shoot at least a little bit. So, yeah, I think another shooter and a 5 is what I would say.
There's one kid really keep an eye on, and I think he's going to blossom under this new coach, is J.Q. Roberts. Physically looks great, got a lot of skill, needs to improve his shot, obviously. But I think there's a reason Mark Byington kept this kid.
Yep.
Yeah, actually, they had four guys who averaged over a block per 70 minutes, Roberts being one of them. Now, they were all between 1 and 1.5, so there's not really a shot blocker. And by the way, Billy, to your Alabama thing, Pringle is listed at 6'10". They also had, the freshman they had that was highly regarded, whose name escapes me. Hang on, I'll get to it.
Sam Walters.
Well, he was one of them, but he's not. Jaron Stevenson was the guy who had a pretty good NCAA tournament game. So, like, it's a little bit different situation there to compared to what Vandy's got. But is it the kid from Cornell? Is it Manon or Manion, or how do you pronounce that? M-A-N-O-N.
Think it's Manon. Yeah.
I do not understand why this kid didn't play more at Cornell. I'm going to give you some stuff he did last year. He shot 71% from the line, had a 61% effective field goal percentage, which is outstanding. 63% true shooting percentage, which is really, really good. Scored 22 points per 70 possessions. That's the best on this team. Pulled over 7 boards per 70. Had over 5 assists per 70. Had nearly 4 steals per 70 possessions. Blocked a shot per 70. Did turn it over a little bit, but still an assist to turnover of 1.4. Here's what the problem was, now that I see it. He fouled almost 6 times for 70 possessions, so that's why he wasn't on the floor more. But I'm looking, had an offensive rating of 118. That's really good. Had a defensive rating of 97. That's excellent. PR 26.1. That's the best of anybody they got on this roster. if he can stay out of foul trouble, I think he's a really, really, really good player. And McLaughlin, too, in a different way, I think is a little bit better than people have sized him up to be.
Yeah, I just think you look at a lot of these guys and you start to dig a little bit deeper into the numbers and you kind of go, wow. I mean, it, you know, defensively, you know, all the numbers that you look at as a staff and you say, hey, we need that. They've got those, at least a lot of those guys, defensively good numbers. And I think, you know, with Manning, that's a depth piece, but who knows, maybe down the stretch
it's more
of the
than
season.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you don't know with a lot of these guys because you start to look at, well, where does Collins fit in? Does McLaughlin slide in? You know, it's just, you got a lot to figure out here all of a sudden, you know, I mean, you've got your seven. I mean, right now, plus if JRT comes back, JQ Roberts, Ben Allen Lubin. So I guess that would be 10 at that point. And then you got, of course, you'll have your guys that never play. But I think you still got some decisions to make. I don't know if JRT has made his mind up or not, but I think he's a guy that could also thrive in this system. So, yeah, Chris, you just dig a little bit deeper on these guys and you start to realize things where you go, okay, these are players. You know, these are pretty good players.
Yeah, the one I can't quite figure out is MJ Collins. He played a lot of minutes last year. The numbers weren't great. I don't know if that was just a hole in their roster or he just underperformed and thought there was more in there. But he's the one that I can't quite figure out. I guess he's an assist to turnover guy. He had over two, so I guess he's probably a backup point guard on a lot of teams. But he played a lot of minutes last year at Tech, more than I would have thought he played. But
yeah, should be interesting to see how everything comes together, though. I mean, he said in an interview with Jeff Goodman, which I thought was really good on Field of 68. So I just can't get me to June 1st. I mean, because that's when he can get all these guys in and really work. And man, his energy too, it kind of reminds me of a little bit of James Franklin, where he just immediately, you know, there was something about him. He had that it factor. Now, I think Byington is a little bit different. I don't think he'll be headed off to a bigger job here in a few years. But, you know, I think he has woken up a lot of people, and it's been due, long overdue.
I'm going to go back to what he's done staff-wise. I'm so impressed by it. I mean, I've done a deep dive on these guys, and, man, I'm impressed by everybody he's hired.
Yeah, the Matt Buckland guy from I guess he was at – was he at JMU, Chris? I know he was at Clemson before. Yeah. They've got experience. And there's a picture of this I don't know if you guys have heard of Kodak Black, a rapper. And, you know, he's ever – of course, there's kids that
are
Luke's
heard of him.
Him and, yeah.
but
there's
run.
A there's there's a picture. Yeah, there's a picture floating around of him in a Vanderbilt hat with one of Vanderbilt's director of ops guys. And, you know, it's just stuff like that I think kids nowadays, you know, you got to do some
kids
of that.
Kids nowadays.
And
said Billy, people can stay on the podcast.
Yeah,
that's great.
Carry on, Bill.
No, I was just saying there's a picture going around, and you know, that's stuff that I don't think the previous staff was ever going to do, and that's I wouldn't be surprised if that's something James Franklin ever did or thought of. And you know, you're in Nashville. It's I think Byington just saw what he could do here, and he's done it. So I've been really impressed.
Baseball time?
Let's yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's crunch time. I don't know how else to put it. What this team lacks, I don't ever remember a Vanderbilt team this late in the season that just lacked an eye-popping series win. Some of that's just a product of the schedule. But you know, and the LSU and Florida wins could end up being nice wins. I think Florida right now would make the NCAA tournament. So that's, you know, a notch in their belt. LSU, I think, has got a chance to make it with the schedule ahead. The RPI, I think, is going to be in line. So maybe that's two series wins, one on the road. They're a little bit better than they are at the moment. But, you know, the bludgeoning by A&M, I think that's still on people's minds. They still were just awful at South Carolina to open conference play. If they beat – I don't know if the season looks markedly different if they beat Florida in game three. But at that point, you'd be, what, 11-7 and have a little bit more margin for error, which they might need. But look, guys, they are right now probably a borderline host or two seed somewhere. And if you're a two seed, God, I mean, you don't play an SEC team, but you could get sent to Clemson. You could get sent to Oregon State. You could get a lot of undesirable outcomes. The range of possibilities for them, I guess the bad thing is they got work to do. The other bad thing is the series up ahead. Like, I can't think of many matchups worse for them than Georgia and Athens, the way those guys hit and with that short right field porch. Tennessee is going to be a problem anywhere. Kentucky, you know, they're not losing in that park, although they did to Tennessee. And Mississippi State won't be an easy one. That's the bad news. The good news is, look, let's say they win three of those four series. All of a sudden, we're not talking about whether they host or not. We're talking about, unless they get swept somewhere, them as a national seed. So there's a lot of range of possibilities for what could happen in the final month. And, oh, by the way, I guess they are about to embark on exams. So I guess the good news is that's going to be out of the way soon.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Luke.
Well, and I guess, Chris, I'm a little more optimistic because I just feel like these guys, basically you got to go 10-4. You got 14 games left. Go 10-4 in those 14, which means you got to win the series. You just got to go 2-1. Now, if they happen to sweep Mississippi State, then you could lose a series to a Tennessee or a Georgia or a Kentucky. But the opportunity they have now, like you said, if they win those series – and don't get swept in any of them, they're gonna be a national seed. I mean, if they go 40-15, which 10-4 would be, I've never seen a team in the SEC with 40 wins not get a national seed. So
yeah,
and I feel I'm worried about that third starter on the weekend. And now that with the situation going on with JD Thompson, I don't know how long he'll be out, suspended four games, and of course. You know, last night I'm watching the post game after the UT Martin game, and Corbs is not wanting to talk about it. You can tell he's angry about the whole situation last night and the whole thing. But I'm worried about that because I don't think Devin, in these times that we are in with the bats and the balls, and he's a fly ball pitcher, I don't feel real confident in Devin pitching in the SEC, especially at a Georgia or against Tennessee.
Yeah, exams started yesterday, Chris, for undergrads. And so they roll through right up before the Georgia series. So, you know, I don't know how many of them had them yesterday, started one yesterday or what. But, you know, that could play into last night's struggles. Who knows? Usually it does, you know, with Vanderbilt kids. But Mississippi State this weekend, I think, is a really good measuring stick because they're better than Florida. Mississippi State's pitched pretty well. Nothing really, you know, wows you with Mississippi State. Their overall record isn't great. They've lost a few midweeks that kind of surprise you. But they swept Auburn last week. And, you know, I just think this is another test for Vanderbilt to see, okay, is this team in the upper echelon? You know, I think they proved it last weekend, but they got another chance to keep it rolling this weekend. Georgia, I think that Georgia series is massive because if you go down there and beat Georgia and, you know, chalk kind of holds, you beat Mississippi State, maybe you go on the road and beat Kentucky. Who knows what happens with Tennessee and Knoxville. But I just think their road record is what's hurting them right now in the RPI. Yeah. They're 3-7 on the road. Now, there's some other teams ahead of them that aren't great on the road. Like Alabama struggled on the road this year. You know, Oregon State has struggled. Georgia has struggled on the road, but they need to get that up because right now they're 19th in RPI, and RPI matters in baseball and like in basketball. Like RPI is not the only metric, but a big metric. So they've got to get that up. Last year is what they relied on. Their RPI was good pretty much a whole year. So I think that Georgia series, I know it's not this weekend, but I just think that's huge for them. And then you look down and it could get hairy. I mean, Tennessee and Kentucky are Omaha teams, you know, and you got to get, you get Kentucky in Lexington. That's going to be tough. Tennessee coming here. Who knows what the wind is like on a certain day. Tennessee could put 15 or 20 on you. I mean, they've done it. So it is crunch time, Chris. But the good thing is that this team's got the pitching. You know, I don't think it's anything serious with Ethan McElvain. Tim said he was sore, you know, yesterday. So I don't think that's anything super serious. It'll be interesting to see with J.D. Thompson. Obviously, like you said, Luke, Tim didn't say anything. But, I mean, I would guess he doesn't pitch until Georgia, which, I mean, it's basically his rest anyway, other than, you know, add on another day. So I don't think that's anything crazy. But, yeah, I mean, that could have gotten, you know, Ethan McElvain, that's the one that I think made you nervous. You know, I told Joey during the game, I said, I think McElvain's injury, if this is serious, is the bigger story here. You know, just because of they need him. I mean, they need him. You know, and so, yeah, I think down the stretch here, it could get hairy, Chris, but it also could, they could move up into a national seed, you know, so the range is pretty wide.
Billy, you were at the press conference last night after the game, and after seeing the way he answered the first two questions, I would have set the over under on the length of the press conference at about 45 seconds. So congratulations to you guys for perseverance there and actually getting to answer a few things. Was he most upset just about the way they played last night? I mean, he clearly was not happy with their offense. What did you think he was bothered by the most in the no doubt many things that were bothering him last night?
Yeah, I just think offensively, you know, he was asked about the offense and it was one of the Hustler guys. I felt bad for him when he asked it. You know, he said, "What'd you see from the offense?" And Corbs just goes, "I saw what you saw. What'd you see?" And so it was just one of those nights, you know, because Davis, I asked Davis Diaz, he said, you know, it's just baseball. You know, you're not going to get Corbin to say it's just baseball with this team. But, Chris, I just thought his offensive approach was bad. You know, it's UT Martin, you know, and you should be you should be producing against them. And I know there are nights where it is just baseball, but Corbin did say that Davis put a good swing on that one at the end. And, it was just classic Corbs. You know, it was the swings. They pitched fine. I mean, you know, I mean, you give up five runs, maybe one too many, but I mean, you pitched fine. I just think he wants this offense to be aggressive. And he's talked about that with Davis Diaz, especially, you got to be aggressive and get up there and swing the bat. And I think he knows they've got to do that. He thinks they've got the pitching, but I just think he knows they've got to hit the baseball. I mean, that's plain and simple. And he was not happy with what they did last night.
Well, and I know you caught this, Billy, when someone mentioned about Loboke's performance and he said, yes, Sam just decided to strike everybody out since we couldn't catch a fly ball.
Yes.
That was funny. I laughed out loud. Yeah.
Which doesn't bode well. Oakham.
No,
but that's the other thing defensively. You know, there's been little things here or there, whether it's in the outfield or right side of the infield, that they do have to clean up too. But knowing Corbin and the way he just is able to figure it out with teams, I think they'll be fine. But Chris, crunch time's a good word. It's time for this team to, you know, to get going.
I will say
that's hands. Go ahead, Luke.
I'm sorry. I will say this about non-conference. Did you guys happen to see the Duke and Wake Forest scores last night?
Yeah.
Duke gets beat 18-4 by a good Campbell team, but look, 18-4. And then Wake Forest loses to Elon.
Yeah, I did see the Wake Forest one, yeah.
So those are two. No.
I know their midweek schedule hasn't been a killer schedule other than Indiana State. They did beat them. Indiana State, I think somebody had hosting this week. And by the way, Vanderbilt was being sent there. I think it was 11.7's bracket that it did. Mm-hmm. But they've won 10 in a row in the midweek. I think they've won, 14 or 15-0 out of conference overall. I mean, that's, you know, to not have a stumble in there is pretty good. I think that's one thing. One of my pet peeves with the polls is the midweeks don't matter. And so you kind of get, you kind of get away with losing some games there where that's something that's kind of on their plus side. But yeah, the outfield, and it just hasn't seemed to matter who they put. Like, to see Matthew Polk, man, in center, I'm not down at Polk, but I think if you'd said a year ago that he's going to be a center fielder, nobody would have guessed that. This is whoever they put out there. I don't think that they've had a worse defensive outfield since Tim's been here. It just, the pieces, yeah. The way the roster was, like, because you need, everybody's complaining, well, they need power. Well, he's gone all in and said, I'm going to throw Lanive and Holcomb out there every day. And they are hands down their two biggest power threats. So with Holcomb, there's the issues with the breaking ball. And with Lanive, it's hot and cold. But I think he said, all right, we're going to live and die with those guys. It might be die, but if you're going to be able to need to compete with people and hit home runs, those are your best two chances. Unfortunately, you're also seeing the downside of that. Although Holcomb's athletic, played shortstop in high school, but it just isn't, it's not computing yet in the outfield.
Yeah, Maldonado's injury, I think, guys, really made them push some buttons they didn't want to press eventually. Because maybe we're sitting at RJ Austin in center, Maldo at first, you know, Davis second, everything's kind of the same, and you're just kind of figuring out left and right, but having to figure out center too with a year after Bradfield leaves, that's not easy. But Luke, I think Chris is right about the power. You know, you're kind of, you'll sacrifice not too many errors, but maybe a misplay here or there. If that guy gets a 3-run shot, you'll probably take it.
Yeah.
You know, after that inning. And a lot of teams are doing that too.
You know, you look at this, and was it Espinal and maybe Polk and Bastine or three of the leaders in home runs? You know, if you have to on Polk to be your home run leader, yeah, it's not good. Now, I do have this. I still think you're going to wind up, by the time the season's over, you're going to have about six guys with 10 home runs. And even though we're going to still be in,
they better hurry up.
Well, I'm just saying the entire postseason. Because you know how it is. We hit four Saturday. So you're going to have those days where you're going to hit four. And you're going to hit three. And we're going to play a tournament game where we go crazy. So, you know, those things, we're still what? We're 12th or 11th in home runs. We're ahead of Missouri and I think maybe Mississippi State, maybe.
Somebody else. Is.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's the home run thing, except for Tennessee and Georgia – and A&M maybe. I'm not worried about that as long as they just keep hitting the doubles, and I think we're still second in the league in doubles.
Guys, you go back and look from the start of the year. I think when injuries happen and, you know, here and there, you don't really realize it, whereas when they all happen at once, it seems a little bit more notable. But let's not forget they've lost their starting first baseman, who was one of their maybe better three or four hitters at the end of the year last year. They lost Bulger pretty early. You can debate whether he should have been in the lineup or not, but he was, and he was hitting pretty well. And since that hamstring injury, which was what, I think, before conference play even started, he's never been able to come back and regain enough health or productivity to grab a lineup spot. Humphrey's got, I think what they said, was it a shoulder injury? I don't remember what it was, but Humphrey was in the starting mix, their third or fourth outfielder at the start of the year. You've barely seen him in the last 6 weeks. On the pitching side, the guy that was probably going to be their closer, Sawyer Hawks, thrown six innings this year. We hadn't seen him in 2 months. And I know that when he threw, it wasn't good, but I'm wondering, was there an injury in play already at that point? Because the numbers he put up were markedly different than what he did at Air Force. I get different league and everything, but he was a guy that a lot of people liked. Andrew Dukanich, who we debated, he might even be the best arm on the staff. Gave them, what, 10 innings this year? Done for the year. They've had Horn miss a lot of time. I feel like I'm missing somebody. McIlvain's been out a little bit now. I mean, those aren't just guys. Those aren't end-of-the-roster guys. Those are guys that would have contributed in a starting role or a big role in middle relief or starting. I mean, that's what I just named, 6, 7, 8 guys. I don't know that there's been a team in the league. Maybe there has, but that has sustained more injuries to key players than they have this year, but they've got 30 wins at this point. And warts and all, I think that counts for something.
Winning ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the injury bug has just killed them this year. You know, I think for them to still be at 30 wins is pretty remarkable. And, you know, similar setbacks last year with injuries, and they still won the SEC tournament. They hosted a regional. The staff is pretty good, guys. And so I think if they can get a little bit healthier and not have injuries be such a problem heading into the postseason, where you can just kind of throw them to the side, even though you got Dukanich out and maybe a couple other guys are banged up. But if you can get Hawks back pitching a little bit, if you can get Humphrey back as a depth piece, if you can get Bulger back to 100%, I think you just figure some of that out. I think they'll have maybe a little bit more confidence about what they're doing in the postseason.
I will ask him this at some point, and I don't know when it'll be. Maybe it'll be pre-SEC tournament. Maybe it'll be the press conference we get before they get their regional pairing. And I'm presuming they're going to get to a regional. I think a lot would have to happen for them just to not make one. But I'm very interested to see how much of this is just a slow play to get to the finish line and then be playing your best baseball at a regional. With all the injuries, I mean, I wonder how much more cautious he's been with guys than he might have been otherwise. Because, again, you get a lot of these pieces back and healthy. The roster looks a little differently than it looks. Maybe a healthy Jacob Humphrey is a guy that you could put in the outfield somewhere and shore up some of that. Certainly a healthy Sawyer Hawks pitching the way he has can help you. A healthy Ethan McIlvain is a big asset. A healthy David Horn pitching the way he can pitch is an asset. A healthy Devin Futrell. And I mean, yeah, he gives up a lot of fly balls and they get out, but you got to wonder too, was he completely healthy when we were seeing him get rocked? You get all those guys at full strength, and it probably looks a lot different in postseason.
Well, you know, Sawyer Hawks last night, Corb says, is a week out. That's what he mentioned. Yep. I think Ari asked about that. So if you get him back for the Georgia series, that could be huge down there in closing games. Now, I don't know if he's – ready to be put into a role where he's a bridge guy or just pitch a couple of important innings. And I haven't given up on Loboke. I know it was you two. He struck out 8 guys, but Sam is still a strike thrower, and sometimes he throws too many strikes, if that makes sense. But I still think Loboke is going to help this team before it's all said and done, especially when we get in a big ballpark.
I'm with you. I think in Hoover, Sam is a good guy to throw out there. You know, because Hoover's a place, it's not do or die, but you can also see what you might get. And then if this team gets to Omaha, Loboke's a phenomenal guy to have in there. Now, they got to get there, but Luke, you're right. I think Loboke's a good piece to have.
Yeah, I'm going to give you some numbers on Loboke heading into last night. 11 and two-thirds innings. He had a .500 batting average on balls in play against him. That's almost unheard of. Now, look, some of those balls were getting hit hard. He had a 5% home run rate. But when you've got a 3% free pass rate, which is hit batsmen and walks, and that's before last night, and a 20% strikeout rate, the numbers should have been better. I think some of it was bad luck. Maybe some of it's trying to get used to things. But Loboke's got a spot for them. Maybe it is eating innings in Hoover when, you know, you need 4 from somebody and it's a big ballpark and you're up 8-1 in the fifth. Maybe it's doing that in a Friday night regional game. I think there's a place for him. Luke, I'm glad you pointed out because I was going to bring that up too. One other little thing, a note, Levi Huseman's pitching more. And it had always been great, but it's been better of late. ERA, I think this side of 3.5. He's always been a guy that was a top 25 recruit out of high school, if I recall correctly, according to Perfect Game. Couldn't throw strikes at Coastal, but he gives them a lefty that they can use in spots. And so the one, Luke Gutt's another guy who's benefited from getting some pitches because of these other guys being out. Remember when Mississippi State won the national title 3 years ago? They could throw 13 or 14 guys. They had about 2 guys that were really good, and it was 12 guys that could give you something on a given day, And when they didn't, you just roll the dice and go to the next guy. It's starting to look a little bit like that kind of pitching staff. And the benefit to having the injuries and the absences is guys like that get some throws where they wouldn't otherwise.
I'm glad you mentioned Luke Guth. You know, lost in all the melee the other day, he's the one that came in and got out of that inning. Mm-hmm. You know, McElvain, yeah. They go to Guth and he gets out of it. And I will say this, and I'm not blaming the loss on what happened with J.D. Thompson and McElvain, the shock of McElvain. But that game was going really well. And I don't think the umpire would have said anything about what was going on with J.D. It was just one of those things that O'Sullivan brought to their attention. You know, and I think that was probably what irritated Corbs more than anything.
Yeah, and if he's guilty, he's guilty. I have no issue with the suspension, but right. But I suspect there's a lot going on in this league with the bats. Exactly. I don't think either of us can prove it, but I'm guessing I can't prove it. I don't know that, but I will bet you that's part of the frustration. When you got a ball that with a 41-degree launch angle that gets out of the park on Friday night.
Yeah, man. I mean if you ejected a pitcher, and they did, if you eject J.D. Thompson and he's out four games for a foreign substance on his arm, you might want to check those bats, because this power outage is not – now, there's some good bats. I'm not saying that, but it's not just coincidence that these guys, that it's getting ridiculous. So if these umps are checking pitchers, they need to be checking the bats too.
Somebody said to me this weekend, you got a couple teams that are way out in front of others in this league in exit velocities. So maybe that's good hitting. Maybe it's something else. Go ahead, Luke. I'm sorry.
Let me make my statement on the J.D. Thompson thing. If it's okay to use sunscreen and it's okay to have a rosin bag, then I don't think it should be illegal to what he did. I know it helps with spin rate and all that, but what are you going to tell a kid? He can't use sunscreen? Or he can't use the rosin bag if he uses sunscreen? I don't get that. You should either outlaw sunscreen or say you can't have a rosin bag if you're wearing sunscreen.
Well, the problem was he went to his arm and then he touched the ball. Arm, yeah. I mean, you can't tell a kid not to use sunscreen. You can look it up, though. The combination of rosin and sunscreen is something people have done to accelerate spin rate. I don't have an issue with the suspension if that's what happened. Because everybody knows that's a way to do it.
I don't either. But if you watch Major League Baseball or these games, when you're playing in June and July, guys go to their arms all the time. And their arms are glistening. It's not that big of an advantage. I'm telling you, it's not.
Yeah. On the premise, I'm with Luke. Like, I don't think it, you know, I don't think JD feels like it, you know, he's doing something wrong, but maybe he learned and he won't go to his arm. But yeah, Corbin was not happy just as a whole about what happened. And then you kind of compound Ethan McElvain on top of that. I do think McElvain will be fine. We don't have an official update yet, but I think he'll be okay, which is huge. Again, I think that's kind of the bigger story there.
Billy, we ready for the mailbag?
Let's do it.
I'll let you grab that and I'll do the reads here. Mailbag presented by Sutherland and Belk, a family-owned injury law firm. If you or a loved one has been hurt in an accident, give Taylor or Russell a call, 615-846-6200. See what your rights are and if they can help. Also presented by John Levin and the Maynard Nexus Government Contracts Group, which advises government contractors on all aspects of their needs with a proud focus on matching legal solutions to business needs. All right, Billy, let's have at it with the mailbag, please.
All right, we'll start with poor Vandy fan 615. Any word on McElvain and his potential return? Just touched on it. No official word yet, but again, my gut is that he'll be fine. Maybe you see him this weekend. I don't think it'll be anything crazy, but I think Georgia may be back at full strength. Strength would be a conjecture of mine. Again, don't have a ton to base that off of, but I do think he'll be fine. Let's see, with tough road series at Georgia and especially Kentucky, second part of this guy's question, and the UT series looming, are we looking at hosting a regional as the ceiling for this team? You know, we talked about this earlier, Chris. I think maybe national seed is the ceiling for this team. Now, Now, do they look like a top eight seed right now? No, I wouldn't say they do, but I mean, they can go out and prove that they are. So, you know, in theory, the ceiling is a top eight national seed, but I guess maybe the question is that, do we think that's what this team can do? You know, do we think this team can get a top eight seed? I think they can. Is it likely? No, just the way kind of I've been perceiving this team this year, but they can. So, Chris, I don't know what you think, but I mean, technically the ceiling is a top eight national seed, but you know, will they get there? We'll see.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I think get six wins of your next 12 you are in the league you're hosting. I think if you get to 17 and 13, especially if that's a, you know, two midweek wins in there, which would be what? 7 and 5 on out, then I think 50-50 shot at a national seed. I don't know. What may be working against them is that Tennessee, Kentucky, A&M, and Arkansas are all awfully close to kind of locking up national seeds. And so I don't know how the committee is going to feel about giving a fifth. And let's not forget Georgia. Georgia's got a number 9 RPI as of the moment. So maybe you may be fighting with more than just the ACC or Oregon State for that eighth national seed. You might be fighting off a fifth team in your own conference.
If Kentucky continues to play well, by the time we play them, they may not have a whole lot to play for. And that can help us a little bit. Now, I don't know whether he would rest his starters or keep them in the keep the rotation going that late in the year. But if they keep playing the way they're playing, they got a 3-game lead now, and they've got the East clinched or whatever. He may change the way he does things that last series, which could be helpful to us.
And that Kentucky series could be big. I'm not going to sit here and say that could be for the East Division, but it could. I mean, if Vanderbilt say they beat Tennessee, they go down to Georgia, beat Georgia. All of a sudden, that's a big series in Lexington at the end of the season. So we'll see how that pans out. Next baseball question here, Papa Hick 4VU. Vanderbilt sits at 10-8 in the SEC with 12 games left. They really need to find a way to win half those to feel reasonably confident of an invite to the NCAAs. How do you feel about them getting six wins based on the remaining competition and how poorly Vandy has played against ranked competition? Well, that is a good question because six wins, I think they're there and I think they're attainable. Maybe you need to sweep Mississippi State this weekend to get there. But I do think like Georgia's good, but they're not A&M on the road. I don't think it's that big of a monster. It's still going to be a challenge, but I think Georgia Vanderbilt matches up maybe a little bit better. They've got to be better on the road there against Georgia. Maybe they take one and then that would be four there. Tennessee, as long as you don't get swept, you take one or you could take two. That's five, maybe six. And so I think it's definitely attainable. But like Chris, you said earlier, it also could be challenging. I mean, say they get swept against Georgia, you know, say they don't sweep Mississippi State, say they get swept again by Tennessee, which would be, I think, pretty catastrophic especially for this fan base. And then you get swept against Kentucky. That can happen. So I think it's attainable. But this team still has to go out there and prove it. Like I don't like them going to Georgia. There's reason to believe that team will really struggle. This team will really struggle down there. We're not at the point where we can say we've seen it. You know, the track record is that they kind of fall apart on the road. So, Chris, to me, and until I see it, I'm not gonna, you know, predict this team to do anything crazy on the road.
Yeah, I think that. We're glossing over one thing. I think this weekend's really important. And here's the problem with this weekend. It's after this weekend, they got three series left, two are on the road. Mississippi State is the number 40 team in the RPI. I think State is a better team than the RPI gives it credit for. So winning the series is something you almost have to do. I mean, and look, I'm not going to say have to, because you got 9 games left. Let's say you go and do something unexpected like win the series at Georgia. You know, if you get 1 of 3 here, you're 3-3 between those two series. It's sort of evened out. But they're not going to be favored to win 2 or 3 in Athens. I don't think. I wouldn't favor them. So I think getting this one this weekend is important. And the bad thing is I don't think they will get quite enough RPI credit compared to the type of team I think State is. So keep that in the back of your mind too.
I think we mirror Kentucky. So I think that's the one on the road that we have a chance to win 2 of.
Yeah.
And I think that if we have to beat State, you're right, 2 out of 3, we have to do that. And we have to beat either Tennessee or Georgia 2 out of 3. And that's the formula.
Yeah.
All right, NBA door, another baseball question. High-level prediction on where Vanderbilt ends up at the end of SEC play. All right, round the room here. Prediction, where they end up in SEC play. You know, I'll go 17 and 13. I know that can be lofty for what this team is. Maybe they're more of a 16 and 14. Maybe they're more of a 500 type team. We'll see, but I think they can do it. I think this team's best baseball is still ahead of them. Might lean towards 16 and 14, but I'll go 17, 13.
I'll go 17-13 as well, with a caveat there. If McIlvain pitches and if J.D. Thompson pitches and they're hitting a discipline thing with him, that Corbs takes further than the 4 games.
I'm going more pessimistic. I'm going 15-15, which would mean they go 5-7 here on out. If I could take a half win in there somewhere, I'd probably bump it to 5.5. Georgia and Tennessee are bad matchups. Kentucky is at Kentucky, where I think they match up well stylistically. And I think they do, too, with Mississippi State. I'm a little worried about this weekend, guys. I'm going to pick them to win. But State's got 2 really good. They're 1-2 punch on Friday and Saturday. This side of Arkansas is maybe as good as anybody's in the league. It's also exam weekend. So I never count that out as something could happen we're not talking about. I just need to see them be more consistent. I think they're perfectly capable of it. They may do it. But I'm a little concerned based on schedule and based on timing of exams.
All right, back over to basketball. Should we be expecting any more coaches to be announced for men's basketball? I don't think so. Now, I don't know if I missed any of them that haven't been announced. You know, we all kind of knew them from I think Jeff Goodman reported them, a month ago. But I think most of them have been announced. Maybe not the operations guys yet or some of the other guys. But, I mean, the majority of the staff has been announced. So, overall, I don't think so. Let's see here.
Well, hang on, Billy. Have they announced a strength coach yet?
Okay, that is a good one, yeah. I guess that's not official yet, even though.
Because that's going to be the guy from Michigan. I think I've heard.
Yeah.
Who's really
good. That's a good point. Good point. Okay. What aspect of the new scheme, football wise, impressed you the most from an offensive standpoint during spring football? Hard to say. Joey went to the last couple scrimmages. I was able to see the first one. It's hard to say. I just think running with the quarterbacks as a whole has been, impressive. I just don't think the offense was very good. And I think a lot of the staff would tell you that they were better in that last scrimmage. I'll say that they were better in that last scrimmage. But yeah, that's hard to answer. I'll just say overall, I think the way this offensive line will eventually improve, I think, they have to, you're going to see some creative things with Klonakis in this quarterback run scheme that they did at New Mexico State, and you're going to have to do. I mean, they're going to do that this year, but also with the running backs. You know, the team is going to want to run the football. So I just think the way they run the ball will be interesting to watch. I just we're not allowed to get specific anyway, so we wouldn't be able to describe any of the the offensive scheme there. So that's what I've got there.
I was going to say the worst spring practice I ever saw at Vanderbilt. The following year, we won 9 games. So it was James Franklin's – or 6 games. It was James Franklin's first spring. It was horrible. And I thought, how are we going to ever score? And we wound up winning 6 games. So I don't take a whole lot from spring, guys. I really don't.
I'm with you. I'm right there with you. Okay, Vandy Rule. Is your guess that JRT is coming back, or would he be gone by now? I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. I mean, my gut tells me, if I were to bet on it, is that he doesn't come back. But I don't have a ton to substantiate that. I think they should bring him back. Like, if I was looking at it now, unless they think they can get a guy that's better out of the portal, and maybe they can. Maybe they've agreed to that, and maybe JRT is just waiting on paperwork. I don't know. But guys, I don't know if y'all have anything, but I think he's a guy they should welcome back. But again, it's about numbers, and if you got a guy that's better than him out of the portal, then you know you'll take that guy.
This is based on no information, but there's two spots left and the clock is ticking. I would think if he was going to be back, he would have jumped up and taken one / been given one, whatever the proper term is there.
Agree.
All right. VU Wars, do you think a big is in the recruiting plans for Byington, or is he potentially going to play small ball from an offensive style standpoint? We got into this a little bit earlier, but yeah, he's going to recruit bigs, but again, like we talked about, I don't think it'll be a whole lot of 7-footers that can't run. You know, this is going to be probably a lot of 6'9 to 6'11 type guys that can really run the floor, maybe can shoot a little bit, can pick and pop. You know, but again, there's a lot of 7-footers nowadays that can also do that. So I think limiting it to that just height isn't necessarily the right thing to do, but I just think play style wise, you know, he's going to want guys that can run. So yeah, we got into that earlier. Let's see. SR Kane, what were your expectations for year one of Mark Byington when he was hired versus what they are now? That's a good one, Chris. That's probably a good one for you because, you know, I think initially, you know, I think a lot of us were in wait and see mode. But now here in the last couple of weeks, you've kind of turned a little bit. And so have I. I don't know, Luke, if this is an 18-19 win team. We'll see. I think they can definitely get there. But they're going to be so much better. They're going to be better coached. They're going to be more competitive. They're going to be more physical. They're going to be a lot better defensively. You know, valuing defense is something that this staff does, and creating offense out of defense is something they do as well, which you got to do in the SEC. And I think they'll do that. So expectations have changed pretty drastically for me. I still want to, you always got to temper. You know, Joey did a better job of me than that last year, and we saw what happened. So, you know, you got to temper a little bit, but I do think it'll be better. And anything Mark Byington does, it's not going to be poorly run, I don't think, is what I've learned from him. So yeah, Chris, they've changed for me. And I think that's something to look at, as it's changed that quick. Maybe what does it do in a whole off season, you know, after year one?
Yeah, I've got us around 18-13, like I said earlier in the broadcast. I think this team will, because they won't underperform in non-conference. I don't even know who we play. I don't know if, obviously, the schedule's not out yet. But if we're a 9-4 or 10-3 in the non-conference, which we should have been under Stackhouse, then all you have to do is win 7 or 8 conference games, and I think they'll be capable of that if they stay healthy.
Yeah, hard to comment on the schedule and what record would be, because you don't know what the schedule looks like and how many parting gifts Stack might have left them on the way out with that. But, yeah, gosh, I don't think the program – this is my 21st year doing this. I don't think the program's ever been in worse shape than what he took over a month ago. I mean, just top to bottom roster, morale, organization – reputation, you name it. I think as of today, I don't know what percentage chance I would put on it, but I think I'd go at least 35% for them to make the NCAA tournament. Now, maybe it's not much above that. I feel like if I could look at everybody's rosters in the league when they're settled here in a couple of weeks, or maybe it's a week now, and I can look at them and say, all right, I could plausibly argue they're top 8 or 9. Then I think they got a shot to make the NCAA tournament. If I'm looking at it going, all right, I think there's 11 rosters that I know for sure I like better than theirs, then they're probably on the outside looking in. But, I mean, you would have said that about South Carolina a year ago. And Carolina ended up finishing, what, 5th in the league? make an NCAA tournament as a sixth seed. And again, I point back, those were the transfers they got were not eye-popping transfers, but they had a lot of guys that played a lot of ball at places. And that's what he's just brought in. So I don't think you can dismiss the possibility, even if I look at the rosters and say, hey, they just don't quite stack up to everybody else's, which, by the way, I don't know. I'm not making a prediction one way or the other. But I feel like this roster is miles better than the one he had this year. I think people got their expectations out of place based on a little bit of a flukish month to end the season that I don't think they could replicate if they had to go back and do it again. And I think they're in much better shape than I ever would have guessed.
All right, Jerry Lawless, 3. Chris, you mentioned that the men's basketball recruiting development is one of the top 5 most stunning things you've covered at Vanderbilt Sports, at Vandy Sports. What's the rest of that top 5?
Oh, goodness. I think James Franklin's 3-year turnaround's got to be number one. I think Tim Corbin doing what he's done with baseball. I mean, that's your number one story if you're going to go over a 20-year timeline. Now, when I met the guy, I thought this guy's got his stuff together. I think they're going to do things better than people imagine. And if you saw that first year I covered him was their first regional team in 04, his second year. You could start to feel it coming, but if you'd said, hey, they're going to win 2 national titles and have the longest streak of NCAA tournament appearances of anybody at the moment, that would – so that's got to be number one. Franklin's, it would be number 2 just based on smaller sample size. I think the shock of 0-18 – with Darius Garland, just how that all unfolded, that's up there, and just the shocking nature of it, not a good surprise. So those are the 3 that come to mind. I don't know what 4 would be, but I think maybe this, but I think it's in the top 5.
David Price's home run against Michigan, maybe in that regional, was that 07?
Yeah, that's a one-time event. I mean, in baseball, anything can happen in one at bat. Yeah. But
I'm going to fill that in for you. John Williamson becoming a Hall of Fame bowling coach.
Yeah, we didn't really cover that, but maybe so. Yeah, that story's crazy.
Mookie
and the great one.
He went from Corbin's operations guy to bowling coach.
Yeah,
that is a great, great story. Okay, VU Perrier. And here's a good first one. He's got a few, but here's a good first one. Compare Stackhouse's stance on welcoming former players compared to Mark Byington's. Can you say night and day? I mean, you don't even need to say anything. In the introductory presser, Byington mentioned, I didn't know that he was going to mention this. This is something we knew ahead of time, but Byington brought up the fact that he talked to Will Perdue on the phone for about an hour, you know, a week before. And, you know, Stack obviously would have never said that. I don't think so in his introductory press conference. So I just think that tells you it right there. And then I got to ask him it in the presser just with the media after, and he brought it up again that, you know, it's time to come home. You know, we want them a part of the program. They're going to put on events and things with former players. So, It is absolutely night and day. I mean, Robbins on Twitter, Liam Robbins tweeted and has already been all in on Mark Byington. So just some other players on social media too.
The most entertaining thing he said to me was at the press conference when he said, "I'm not good enough to win with bad players." In other words, I'm checking my ego at the door. I'm going to go out, work my butt off, and get players in here that can win basketball games. And that's what he's about. Where he rolls his sleeves up and he goes to work.
That press conference felt like I know exactly where this went wrong, and I'm going to put a couple things out there to let you know that's not the way it's going to be. I mean, if it doesn't involve golf, I can't think of one thing that staff did better than this one.
Yeah, in a short time. It's crazy. Okay. Let's see. Second part, what is the dynamic with Will Perdue Byington wanting him to be around the program, but Candace not wanting him to be around the program. It's probably a Chris and Luke question.
I'll pass on that one.
Okay.
I'll say a little bit about that. I'm not so sure it's about Will as much as it's about getting former players involved. He wants to get a lot of people that have been around the program a long time back involved. He cares about the history of Vanderbilt basketball, I think. I think that means something to him because he knows there was a good history at one time, and he wants to bring that back and bring that good feeling back. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's for sure.
All right, will Vanderbilt be more aggressive in pushing out unproductive players in football with the new NIL portal reality? Luke, I think they already have. I mean, you've seen Ethan Crisp enter the portal. John House, a couple other guys that not, you know, weren't surprising, but, you know, Dylan Betts-Polly is no longer on the program. A couple of guys medically retired, and usually a medical retirement is a coach going to a kid and saying, hey, you know, look, maybe this is an option. Maybe you need to look at this. And again, I'm not saying, you know, that's what happened, but usually that's the case. I know, Luke, you're familiar with the Pat and Robinette thing. I'd be interested to see how that went down. But, you know, I think yes. And, Luke, we've seen it here in the last month or so.
Yeah, Gumbo Gaskins, I guess, went into the portal yesterday. I think you're going to see – you know, and I'm going back a little bit here on spring football. The offensive line that performed in spring, there ain't going to be but two or three of those guys even playing.
I think Leighton Nelson entered the portal. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're going to just see two or three guys that aren't on campus yet play a lot, and it'll be a totally different look. You can't tell a whole lot when you're laying the ball on the ground and turning the ball over in spring like they did. It just makes everything dysfunctional. So, yeah, there'll be a lot of new faces on offense.
All right.
Yeah, his hands have been tied on pushing guys out his whole tenure here until maybe just now.
Yeah, has been
in a way that no other school has had to deal with.
That's just true.
From Omidor, do you have an update on potential O-line transfers into the program? Nobody of note. They did pick up, I think his name, Aiden McConnell, I want to say, from Minnesota, who didn't really play at Minnesota. His dad played at Pittsburgh State under Tim Beck. So that's the connection there. And then, of course, McConnell played for the Titans as well in the NFL. I think he's a good player. I don't know if he starts this year, but I know they picked him up. I don't know. It's hard to target O-line transfers. I have no idea who they're targeting right now. There is a guy from Old Dominion, actually, now that I think of it, forgetting his name, but look up him. I'm forgetting his name right now, but let's see. What position groups on offense and defense need the most help from the transfer portal? Offensive line on offense, maybe a receiver or two. Defense, I think safety depth, Luke, and Clark actually mentioned this in the presser, maybe another safety or two. Other than that, maybe another edge rusher. You can always use one of those. So, you know, you feel good about your depth now, but then you get out there and you play the first SEC team, and all of a sudden you're looking back at the preseason saying we didn't get enough. So I think there's always depth to go around, but I don't know if you guys would say anything else there in the depth offensively and defensively.
I think you hit it.
Okay, Tacker Dad. Number one, why would Candace – okay, we already answered that. We know why Mark Byington kept Van Allen Lubin. Why do you think J.Q. Roberts was the other player he chose to keep? Luke got into that earlier, which I think was good reasoning, just athletic, got some measurables that he likes. What is your favorite transfer ranking site? I think On3 has done a good job, actually, 24/7. Of course, Rivals. But yeah, I mean, any one of them, everybody ranks them. So I don't know if there's a best site. How's your dad doing, Chris? So somebody
much, much better. It's been a couple of weeks. My dad had knee replacement surgery at 81. And supposed to have another one after this one. we're going to drag him to the hospital kicking and screaming on the next one. But yeah, it's been when your parents get old, you just it's required me to be away out to see them in Hendersonville a lot lately. So, and I will be spending some time out there in the next couple of days as well. But thank you for asking.
That's good to hear. Okay, last one here. Had a lot of them today from Billy Ray Valentine. What is behind the reason Vanderbilt is now very active in NIL? Who is behind it? And what have they stated as their reasoning to be so active when Vanderbilt has historically not been willing to be competitive in college sports? I think it's a good question, and they have been active. I mean, I think the basketball portal pickups that have happened is good reason behind that. Football-wise, they're starting to push guys out. They're adding guys. I would say John Ingram is a part of it. There's other people out there as well. I think Clarkley and Barton Simmons are a huge part of that. I mean, they went out and asked. You know, that's what you got to do. And they changed their philosophy. You brought in a new basketball coach that welcomes it and wants it, you know, and was smart enough to do that right away. Baseball-wise, you know, I don't know how much of it they're doing. They're doing it some. Maybe they need to do it more. Who knows? But just timing-wise, they had to. I mean, you're in the SEC, you know, and I think it does revolve a lot around football. I think it was going to happen eventually in basketball with Stackhouse, you know, leaving. I think a lot of it is just football wise and people coming out to support it. Now, there are maybe some extenuating circumstances, you know, with maybe people said, hey, you got to do this or else, you know, maybe some of these were threats. So, but I think overall it was, you know, this had to happen and Clarkley, Barton Simmons, those guys, and Mark Byington, they've gone out and they've done it. So I don't know if you guys have anything else.
I have a couple of things. Millionaires and billionaires don't just throw their money down a black hole. And they, you know, they recognize when a coach should or shouldn't be somewhere. So you can gauge the support that Clark's getting and then now what Byington's getting and obviously what Corbs could get anytime he wants by how they respect that coach. They're just not throwing their money away. So it's your coach that drives all NIL brings.
Guys, the story that I would really like to know, and I don't know when we could write it or tell it and know with that we were accurate 100%, but there's been this little thing in the air since late fall that the boosters run the program. Excuse me, the big donors run programs more so than administrators these days. And look, I'm really skeptical to believe that for a number of reasons. I have some evidence that there's something to it, but I don't think it's 100%. I would love to know how eventually this all resolves, because I don't think if it's the same old Vandy administrative decision that we're dealing with a different coaching staff in basketball. I don't think if it's the same old Vandy thing that we're seeing all these transfers in football and basketball and some guys getting run out too. At the same time, I know how much the school relishes its control. I know the links it will go to keep it and to keep a narrative and sorting through that out at a place where they probably spend more time obscuring or confusing the truth just because they don't like losing control. And they like whatever image it is that they need to portray. That always makes them covering and getting to the truth difficult. I would love to know 5 years from now, if we're doing a podcast or I'm writing a story about, okay, what happened, say, between the UNLV game and football and right now, and how did that hold going forward in the future for all their sports programs? That is going to be, I think, the story that either says this is why Vanderbilt sports had a resurgence, or maybe it wasn't as big an influence as we thought. That's why I ultimately failed.
That's what we got.
Luke, maybe you got some thoughts on that.
No, I don't. I don't. I mean, I do, but there's some. I just don't want to get into it. It'd be way too lengthy, and people don't want to hear me talk any longer.
All right. We've been an hour and 20 minutes already, so. All right, guys. I guess we're done.
We're done.
All right. We're out of here. Thank you. Thank you to Billy and Luke for joining me. Thanks to our listeners for listening and watching. I'm Chris Lee. This has been the Vandy Sports Podcast.